Hello, you're listening to Spoiler
Filled
Film
Conversation.
Hooray!
It's kind of you to cheer.
We always get the same cheer out of Jamie, which is the same one you give someone in a pub when they've broken a glass.
I just recorded it and play it back. I don't bother every week.
I could take
a cue from you there, Jamie.
Really, all we need is one good take and we'd have the intro done every week, but whatever, let's organically do it the same every time. So, I'm Richard Nicholas, hello, and with me to chat about a film is Anthony Evans.
Hello.
Jamie Thomas.
Hello.
And Abigail Bain.
Hello.
So guys, this week's marvellous film, a classic from the childhood, is Rockadoodle. It's one of those coming-of-age stories, like Lion King or The Wizard of Oz, and I'm sure it's in everyone's DVD collection and is a treasured gem, and it's probably too big a film for us to talk about. But talk about it we shall. You guys all love Rockadoodle, right? That's what we're going into here. Is a big love-pouring podcast of affection? One door. Anyone like it at all?
In the world?
Oh, send your comments to our Twitter or Facebook.
I really don't know how this film could have gone so wrong.
Oh.
I mean, the director, Don Bluth, he pretty much owned the 80s with all of his films. We got The Secret of Nim, An American Tale, A Land Before Time, and All Dogs Go to Heaven were the last four films before making this. And I don't know, it's such a car crash compared to all of those.
It's like he was building up all this like goodwill towards a huge disaster.
Well, let's not just blame Bluth. Let's give the rest of the details. Abby, do you want to give the details, and I'll do a quick plot summary, and then we'll talk about it some more.
Okay, this is Rockadoodle from 1991, directed by Don Bluth, Gary Goldman, and Dan. I'm going to go with Quenster. Written by Don Bluth, John Pomeroy, David J. Steinberg, David N. Weiss, T.J. Quenster, Gary Goldman, and David N. Weiss. Again, as the screenplay, everyone else did the story. It stars Phil Harris, Glenn Campbell, Eddie Dezen, Catherine Holcomb, Toby Scott Ganger, and some other people.
Yeah.
You left out one of the most important cast members.
Christopher Plummer.
Yeah.
My apologies.
I will say, before we start, the sheer number of people involved in writing and directing this film is probably telling of why it was such a disaster.
Well, you know what they say. Loads of chefs can only improve upon a broth, isn't it?
Because it was just looking back over like some of the ones that Anthony named now, The Secret of Nim, An American Tale, and The Land Before Time, all only directed by Don Bluth.
Mm.
So
maybe that's, yeah, who knows. Glenn Campbell's in it, though. I mean, he did Rhinestone Cowboy and, or was it called, I wanted to say Grindstone Cowboy. I said it wrong.
Rhinestone.
Rhinestone Cowboy and Wichita Lineman. Classic country, lovely songs. I love them. They're good. I genuinely like Glenn Campbell's bigger hits. I don't know about his other stuff. Still, he does
a very, very competent kind of, I suppose, semi-impression of Elvis.
Yeah.
Hmm. As a rooster. Anyway, the plot essentially is that age-old classic. Kid is having a nice time, and then a storm, and then the kid goes mad and thinks a wonderful, weird thing happened to him. Much like Alice in Wonderland or Wizard of Oz, only this time the kid is turned into a cat by a magical owl and has to go rescue a rooster who impersonates Elvis in some way to bring the sun up again because owls hate the rain. That's the plot, right? That's simple, easy to digest plot.
Yeah.
But it is a classic sort of formula, storm, sleeping, mad dream,
yeah,
wake up, like, everything's back to normal.
It seems like they were attempting to go for like a rock and roll fairy tale.
Yeah, attempting. Good words.
Yeah. I just wanted to be clear on that.
Yeah. Well, let's talk expectations, because this is a thing I watched many times as a kid. I think I may have watched it three times in one night instead of going to sleep once. which might have damaged me mentally for all my life. But
it would explain a lot.
But I didn't. I mean, I haven't watched it for a long time. I watched it loads, but then, like, you know, in adult life, I didn't feel I needed to turn to Rock-a-Doodle. I can tie my own shoelaces, so why would I need to be reminded by a film about a dog who learns that lesson? So I wanted to revisit it and remember what it was about, because I could remember an owl that was kind of scary, and an Elvis rooster, and a cat that had an annoying voice, but that's it. What did you guys ever see it before? Anthony, I guess, should start us off.
Yeah, I was in a similar thing to you. I mean, I'd seen this. I remember seeing this kind of like loads of times when I was a kid. But the only thing that I could remember was a actual person being turned into a cartoon cat. Yeah. And I don't know. I remember liking it, but I thought that's not a really good memory for...
Yeah.
For predicting what's going to come out. So, I don't know. I guess I was expecting something, as it usually is when you're looking back nostalgically, something trashy but fun.
But it maybe only ticked one of those boxes.
Yeah.
I don't know, there's a dog dressed as a lobster and a dog dressed as a penguin at one point.
I thought awesome. It would be pretty inoffensive.
Sure.
And it wasn't.
So had you seen it before, JB?
Yeah, exactly the same. Like, I'm beginning to realise the more of these podcasts I do that I was a really stupid kid.
All kids are idiots.
I don't know, Rock and Roll, Super Mario Brothers, and this, films I loved when I was a kid.
We'll watch anything as kids. Like, you'll just, if it's a children's program and it's aimed at you, you like it no matter what the quality.
I think I was quite old when I, for the first time, realised I'd watched a bad film. It was Batman and Robin.
Wow.
Ooh.
But I watched this. This is one of those films that, like, I'm sure my mum got sick of it because I rented it so many times from the video shop, as you used to do back in the day.
Yeah.
And, like, I didn't really remember that much about it. Like, I had vague memories of the singing on the farm scenes and the scenes in, like, what is the city, which I guess is meant to be Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And I remembered the end where Chanticleer, I'm going to hate saying that name.
Chanticleer.
Oh.
I'm going to say it properly. Chanticleer. And if you say it enough, you'll give people magical momentum.
Well, that's the bit I remembered, was him, like, taking off at the end.
Setting himself on fire and singing.
Yeah. And, like, driving away the rain clouds and stuff. And I thought, like, I don't know, I remembered enjoying it in that innocent, childlike way, and I thought it would be like, I just thought it would be like an adorable, but kind of forgettable, learning 90s animated movie, not the cheap rubbish it ended up being.
Good. Abby, what about you?
I'd never seen it before. It wasn't part of my childhood. I'm so glad.
Now it's part of your adulthood, and you know it'll give you something to pour scorn over.
I don't know if it's better to go into it having never seen it as a child and just disliking it, or
at least you have that cushion.
Yeah,
we've had it ruined by seeing it again, but you just have it as is. So what did you? I mean, you know, what were you expecting from it?
I was expecting it to not make sense, like all kids' movies do. Fundamentally speaking, kids' movies do not make any sense.
Yeah, animals don't talk and wear clothes. What?
But it was the way that it talked down to you the whole time.
It was
that just
very
absolutely ruined me.
All the songs just highlight the exposition more. They already establish it, and they go, "We hate the light, we hate the light, we are the evil owls."
Okay, is this film a musical or not? Because there's songs in it, but they're about a minute long each.
Just because it's not a good musical doesn't mean it's not a musical. But Abby, you were saying the song sort of talks down to you?
The whole thing talks down to you. And I think... I don't think it's a musical. I just think that the owls are musical. Because they're the only ones who really... But they're the only ones who did musical numbers. He just did songs.
Songs. I mean, the evil owl, the Duke of Owls, which is awesome as names go. He has a massive, massive pipe organ that stretches unfathomably into the sky, which is powered by, like, electricity and stuff. And he sings... It's so evil to play that, like, a massive tower with a massive pipe organ playing evil songs with your singing owl friends about how you don't like the light and how you're nasty and stuff. That's super evil and awesome, right?
Yes, but it is slightly undermined by... the extremely camp singing of all the other owls.
Oh dear.
They were fun, but they were extremely camp.
The basic story isn't a terrible idea.
Yeah, it is.
And there's no, it's not.
Yeah,
it's typical,
right.
Like fairy tale.
No. It is not. I like this film a little, but one of the things that bothers me the most. Is it starts with a shot of the cosmos, then pans to the Earth, which isn't part of the Milky Way for some reason. Whatever, it's vaguely a planet. And the story is about how a rooster on one farm brings the sun up, and if it doesn't crow, the sun doesn't come up, and we have eternal nighttime and rain. I'll get to the other bits later, but that's enough of a problem.
Well, the confusing thing is it's not made clear whether he is actually bringing the sun up or just driving the clouds away.
Yeah. They make the point of one time he was distracted by the agent of the Duke of Owls, this rooster, the only rooster in the world that brings the sun up by singing like Elvis. Good job, Glenn Campbell. Good job. But he misses that opportunity. The sun starts to come up and everyone's like, oh, you idiot, we don't need you anymore. And he feels bad and he walks away. And the sun immediately goes away, thus proving them wrong.
And setting up the premise for the film. But they still go away anyway.
Go away, even though the sun hasn't come up. You are clearly not needed. Go and plough your trade in Vegas and we'll just... Oh, wait, it's raining now and it's dark and it just makes no sense.
I do feel the first bit, the first 5 minutes, has the kind of feel of a kind of fairy tale or kind of fable or something about, you know, the rooster crowing and all that. And I feel like they kind of missed something by not extending that bit more and just kind of throwing you in.
Yeah.
Like, here's the situation. Go with it.
They do. It's very fast-paced at times. It doesn't take long before a kid is turned into a cat and him and his dog, magpie and mouse friend that he's got now because they turned up are all sailing off to the city to save the day.
Do you know what? This happens with some animated films, better ones, but I don't know if anybody else noticed. You can't not notice. The animation gets steadily worse as the film gets into the middle. It gets much more. Like, it starts to look like a Tom and Jerry cartoon and then gets better again towards the end.
There's nothing wrong with Tom and Jerry cartoons.
It starts out looking like a Don Bluth film.
Yeah.
Then it ends up looking like a Warner Brothers short.
Yeah.
Mm. And then it starts looking like a Don Bluth film again.
Yeah, I think that's kind of to do with bad budgeting.
Yeah.
Because you start at the beginning, because the beginning is always important. Then you go to the end, because that's also important. So then you're left with the middle, and it's kind of we've only got kind of a few pieces of string left. What can we do?
The film kind of seems like that, though. The whole middle section is just... I don't remember a lot of the middle section, because why would I?
Yeah, it's kind of once they get to Las Vegas, it's kind of, okay, that's the first act gone. And then you don't really remember anything then until they find Chanticleer and they go home.
It's
suddenly lots and lots of slapstick.
Yeah.
Very fast pace. I mean, there's so much and it comes so quickly. You kind of don't really have enough time to take it all in.
No, I couldn't, it sounds ridiculous, but I couldn't keep up with the film. I didn't know what was happening.
Well, I guess the weird thing is it starts with the cartoon introducing us to this idea that there's a happy farm with a rooster that wakes up the sun. And then that pans out and shows us that that was a story being read to a small boy who's sleeping on the farm, or a real-life farm, and there's also a storm happening, and a flood, and the kid can't help because he's too small, and that gives him a complex that he has to solve throughout the film, but it's really not that. It's like he can't really. He's still small when he wakes up at the end. So I don't. The kid can't help out with the flood because it's nighttime. It's a dangerous flood, and you know, little kids, you know, shouldn't help with that sort of thing. They weren't being prejudiced to him, really, were they? What's the lesson to learn here?
Have a clip and everything will be sorted out when you wake up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they kind of force on the typical you have to be brave kind of thing.
But he wasn't a wimp, he was up for helping all along.
Yeah, so you're right. There is kind of like no message or moral, really.
No.
Abby, I think you were saying when we were talking beforehand that the ending's really weird. Something to do with the kid being forced to stay in bed?
Yeah. It's daytime. The kid's fine. Everyone else is fine. He tries to get up. So he goes, no, go back to bed. Hey, what? It's like, morning.
What happened to him?
He presumably became ill overnight and no one knows.
Did his mum find him? It was like, oh, my son's a cat now. Oh, wait, he turned back. I better take him to bed and nurse him. What?
Yeah. It's very bizarre. But you need to become an animated critter to learn a lesson, I think. So, a pointless lesson that it doesn't make sense. But that's the thing is, we have this universe that, you know, for whatever reason, it's basically, the better story is, some friends have shunned a character in some way, thinking that they didn't have worth, even though they totally did. And they didn't, I don't know, whatever, for whatever reason, they made their friend feel unwanted and he left and they needed him back because, you know, he's friends and he does a job. And it was kind of about bringing back a friend you took for granted, but without being that clear as to whether he was. Because they didn't exactly break up with him. He just sort of went, oh, we'll leave then. But they're getting back their rooster friend. And for some reason, the kid turns into a cat because of a man. I mean, why does the Duke of Owls, who is evil and hates night, like only likes nighttime, fair enough, night. Owls are nocturnal, but he hates the rain, and he physically, like, turning a torch on at him makes him fly away like it's like he shot him with a gun.
He likes the rain. He makes the rain happen.
Why is he magical?
And why is his magic manifested with magic breath?
A weird coughing up dust with little planets and stars in.
Although, I suppose I should interject at this point. I don't really have that much good to say about this film, but the one good thing is the Duke of Owls.
I love the Duke of Owls as well. he's so evil. Good.
Yeah, he's so evil, but still he really has nothing to do. He just kind of turns up and is kind of a bit intimidating.
He was going to be more evil. At the IMDb trivia, there was a really dark scene where the Duke bakes a live baby skunk in a pie.
He basically, he's motivated by enjoying evil, in wanting it to be dark all the time, because owls like dark, you know. Yeah. And he eats animals, he tries to eat a pig at one point, but...
He also hates rock and roll. At one point.
Oh, him and Batman.
And Christopher Plummer is just so sumptuous as him.
He revels in being evil, and everything he does is delivered so deliciously. It's perfect. Abby, you must have enjoyed the Duke of Owls a bit.
I think by the time he got enough to say, I was fairly disengaged.
Right.
He deserved to be in a better film.
Yeah,
he deserved to be... Like, there's nothing wrong with an evil owl character, apart from maybe explain why he coughs magic, can change size whenever he wants, arbitrarily decides to change a little boy into a cat. He has the ability to do this, the ability to make it nighttime all the time, and, you know, he changes size at will, just... I mean, how does he have any problems? Like, he lives on a weird tower with an organ, and he seems to, like... have the motivation of he wants to eat and stay nighttime, but it doesn't make any sense that he fails because, like, he only has a rooster that he's already dispatched out of the way, and why doesn't he use his magic more effectively?
Why does he keep sending his idiot nephew?
He has all these other owls that just sing with him. It's the tiniest little, like, vulture-looking owl out.
His clearly imbecilic nephew, who he knows is useless. and yet keep sending to do really important jobs.
Yeah. But that's, you know, every evil villain needs a henchman who's sort of pathetic and weaseling.
Again.
Although he was extremely sinister sometimes.
What's his name? Hunch or something?
Hunch, yeah. Like, you know, he'd pull out a knife sometimes.
Yeah.
Just be like, oh, I'm actually going to come and kill you now. It's sort of, not in a kind of cartoony kind of way.
Yeah.
In a slightly more sinister way.
And he was psychotic. Yeah. That was the nasty thing. Like, that re-engaged me because I was afraid.
And he has that magical Swiss Army knife that could be almost anything. And he is just, he's sort of rambling away to himself about just sort of words that rhyme and are sort of mean and horrible. He's kind of, I liked him, but he was useless.
And there was like the weird thing where the Duke would just breathe on him all the time and change him into something else.
Something, you know, one time just this disgusting, ugly green thing.
Yeah, like so turned him into some kind of like swollen gherkin thing.
Yeah, oh. I still feel sick looking at it when he changes. Yeah, it's just bizarre. I guess one of the things to talk about is the main characters. And I'm a bit annoyed that they have no reason. I mean, they're helping this cat who they've just only just understand that he had been a kid a minute ago. But they help him get Chanticleer back. And they just sort of divide up into two teams. Team A, which is the dog called Patu, who is also narrating. And is that's the voice of the... That guy's done, like, loads of stuff for Disney, isn't he? Like, Baloo the Bear and...
Like, no.
No? Who am I thinking of? Is he not in it? I swear, he sounded just like...
No, you're right. You're right, it's Phil Harris.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The dog. Wow. Didn't you think he had a really recognisable voice?
I did, but I didn't know where from. Oh, yeah. Little John didn't...
Baloo and the cat from... The ginger cat, whatever his name is, from Aristocats.
Now I have to watch it again.
But like,
so this film like does have a caliber.
Oh yeah,
that should have like heightened it above other things.
But like, okay, one of the things with these characters is how do you like to design them? Because Bluth for me always is like a slightly uglier version of Disney.
Yeah,
like he's almost like I want to be like Disney, but I want to avoid it exactly. So I'm going to make slightly weirder palette. Color palette choices and slightly stupider looking clothes on them or whatever.
The really obvious budgetary constraints really hurt the look of the film. Like, the character designs themselves are not, like, they're pretty good. But they become so poorly animated as it goes on. And, like, there's no... It doesn't have the kind of, like... depth of detail that other Don Bluth stuff like The Land Before Time or An American Tale has.
Mm.
It's just... It just looks cheap.
It looks arbitrary sometimes as well. Like, there's the B team that doesn't go on the adventure and sort of stays there to be prey for the owls and just almost be a distraction. There's, like, a pig who wears weird green trousers and stuff and a rabbit in a hat, a bunch of chicks or mice or something. Like, and they all sort of float about in the flooded house. We assume the parents and brothers and sisters of this kid are dead and drowned. We don't really worry about them the whole film till the end. And
although he does bring them up, like, periodically, but everyone just kind of, like, pushes it aside.
He makes a phone call, like, out of courtesy back to the pig, and the pig is kind of idiotic and a bit too concerned with being under threat and running out of batteries to keep the owls away with their flashlight or whatever. And he just... you know, ends up losing the phone, and then that gives the Duke of Owl the most amazing, intimidating phone call to me. But he does care about his family, but they're not really in it after he's a cat. Whatever. So they're the B team who are in peril from the owls, while Team A, Patu the dog with a shoelace tying problem, the plucky mouse character with big glasses and weird big pants. She's, what's her thing? What's her name?
Peepers.
Yeah. She's sort of...
the intelligent one, I suppose.
Yeah. And a magpie who tags along, not because he's anyone's friend, just because they need an obnoxious character to come along. And
him I hate the most.
Yeah.
Just
he was... That's the thing. He was... It feels like he was just put there to annoy us. No other reason.
Just to eat lasagna and pie and be a hindrance and be in peril at times where they're going to fall, but he can fly, so it's not a big deal. Yet he's still in peril with them.
Wait, what was the lasagna thing? That was so odd that he discovers lasagna on their trip.
Well, you know, Garfield was big at the time. I don't know. He just, it's very odd. He just, he adds nothing, but he's kind of obnoxiously, his voice is kind of irritating. I get it. I get the choice, but for some reason he wears like a bow tie and some weird trousers as well. Like, they're all just sort of dressed weirdly. The pig as well, I just don't like the look of the pig. I'm glad he's not in that much.
It must be horrible to be someone like Eddie Deason, who's the voice, who just has a voice like that.
I don't know. If in the right character, his voice could be effective, but I don't know. The magpie serves no purpose. They all kind of serve no purpose. I guess the dog is the most helpful and proactive one. The mouse saved them by flying a helicopter at one point, amazingly, even though they all have to team up to drive a Cadillac.
A very phallic-shaped helicopter. Did anyone else notice?
Well, they have, I mean, they have massive, massive pink things all the time. Like, they have the Cadillac in it, I love, because it's huge and long and obscenely decorative. And then on the back of the Cadillac that Chanticleer has, there's like a ridiculous trailer that's huge and oversized and has a pool on top and everything. I love the kind of over-the-top look of some of the glamour that is bestowed upon Chanticleer because of his connection, because he's famous now. That's the side plot, really, that is all part two. Does anyone want to try and explain what happens to Chanticleer in the, you know, the time he's been away?
He becomes what Elvis became in his later career. He's like he sings at a club in what is meant to be Vegas.
In the same universe as like Rover Dangerfield, there's a very similar feel to the times. I like Rover Dangerfield. I won't be slagging that off. We've even done a film commentary, I think so. Anyway, it's in that weird Vegas world. And he's Elvis. Go on.
But he's like, it's a hollow existence. He's lonely.
And he misses the farm because he's built himself, with his riches from being a rich and famous rock and roll singer, he's built himself a weird, a really thinned tower with a farm on top of it that he lives on because he misses the farm. Of course.
Yeah, I think one of the major problems is he's kind of got it pretty good, and they kind of have to invent a reason for him.
He's a simple country boy, Anthony.
It kind of makes sense, like, you know, I miss my friends and I'm lonely. But then when he does get a girlfriend, even though it's like a fake girlfriend, essentially, he's fine. All of his problems are solved.
Yeah, it's a very fleeting problem for him as well, because essentially, his evil agent or producer or whatever is a fat fox who looks like his trousers are like a watermelon colour. Like, he's got watermelon trousers, a massive, fat, ridiculous fox, and he wears like pink shoes and like a pink hat, and is evil and smokes a cigar or whatever.
I presume he's meant to be the equivalent of Elvis's manager.
All right. Was he evil as well?
It depends on what you think of Elvis.
Elvis's agent obviously went on to inspire villains such as Carface from All Dogs Go to Heaven, because this is the kind of villain that this fox is. So you know, we sort of sympathetic towards Chanticleer because riches doesn't bring you happiness is his problem, I guess. And he has been shunned by his family and friends, I guess. But they have to rescue him from the evil fox who's working for the Duke of Owls. Oh, that was a twist. And essentially, that involves them, the gang of a cat, a dog, a mouse and a magpie, all floating off in a case down an aqueduct pipe. Which provides some of the most rubbish jokes I have. Like, what was to do with that?
I don't know.
That was one of the things that finally ruined it for me. Was as soon as it went down an adequate pipe, it's like, that's not It's not. It's beyond stupid.
It's not a joke because it doesn't make sense in any. Like, there's no.
Like, what is an aqueduct? But I mean, I know what an aqueduct is, but it's not like a well-known thing. And it's just almost like, oh, well, poor guy has, you know, dyslexia. And children aren't going to be laughing at it. Oh, he thinks the aqueduct is adequate. Chuckle. And it, I mean, you've said many times it lost you, but I think it didn't really get you at any point, Abby.
No, at no point did it hook me in any way that was good.
But, yeah, it's hard to justify, yeah. But, I don't know, it provided another moment for Hunch to have a telling off from the Duke of Owls, who was cooking with his little chef's hat on and singing to himself. And, I don't know, there were moments in it that made me chuckle genuinely. And it was mainly because Hunch was funny, I think, and slightly intimidating, as we mentioned, even though he's pathetic. But, okay, so after getting washed away in a big case, the cat... dressed like Davy Crockett, because his doll was dressed like Davy Crockett at the time. I don't know, why was he dressed like Davy Crockett?
I don't know, he wears a Davy Crockett hat at one point when he's like shouting down to his family as the farm's getting flooded.
Yeah, but then his doll has it. Adventure, that must be it. It's not a very good looking cat either, because he's sort of weird blonde hair that doesn't make sense.
I think all the animals have a kind of, we're just putting clothes on that we found in the rain because it blew off the line kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I suppose it just extends to him, but it's kind of no rhyme or reason for it.
Like, Patu wears shoes, but only on his back feet. All of his paws are feet, right? So why doesn't he have four pairs of shoes? Surely, you know, if you have shoes on all of your appendages, you know, you're not going to be tying your shoe. I mean, I have problems with that. The important thing is, they end up in Vegas, find out he's dressed up like Elvis and has weirdly dyed his... what does a rooster have on his head? Not hair, though. Like, it's...
feathers. Well, he has a pompadour.
What's a pompadour?
You know, the big quiff.
A quiff. But, you know, cockerels have those red things that no one knows the name for. Bits. Anyway, that's... He's dyed his hair, he's become a bit more Elvis-y, and he's putting on a Vegas show. And so, because there's no dogs, cats, mice, or whatever allowed, they all dress up like penguins in order to get in and see where Chanticleer is, which I thought was adorable.
See, this is where I started to just tune out. So I was like, I don't even know what's going on anymore.
Oh, but... The cute factor went up when they were dressed as penguins. And then lobsters! And even the frogs! The cool kind of hoppy, muscular frog bouncers were awesome. And then they dressed up as frog sharks.
I will say, in the film's favour, the frog bouncers was a very good idea.
Although, they did generate the most pointless song I think I've ever heard in a film.
About
ever.
7 seconds of singing just to justify it as a musical.
Just to reiterate points, really. That's whenever the singer would kick in is to any thicker kids watching, remind them, why are they in Vegas? Oh, they're saving Chanticleer. Thanks for the song, guys. So, you know, it was that kind of thing, wasn't it? But, you know, madcapped rescuing attempts and, you know, paper planes being thrown to send messages. What was also weird is Chanticleer's never met this cat child. But he still signs it, and like it's only at the end where he really meets this cat boy. So it's almost not his story. Really, all the friends should have been going together without the kid, really. Like, he at no point had met him, so whatever. Your signature means least, little cat boy. But yeah, like you say, this part has really fast-paced stuff going on. So it's everything from ridiculous car chases with giant pink Cadillacs, being tied up by the bad guys and then freed pointlessly by the other bad guys who are interfering, and caravan crashing and learning to be bold and brave and jump recklessly off vehicles.
It was so, like, it was so frenetic that I just, like, I couldn't keep up. Like, I had no idea what was happening. Like, I can see why I would have enjoyed it as a kid, because it was just, oh, look at all this stuff.
Yeah.
But, like, as a developed human being, I can't piece this together.
I think it rushed a lot. Like, Anthony, you brought up the point about the girlfriend for Chanticleer. Like, basically, because he's miserable and they want to keep him in Vegas and entertaining people, they manipulate one of the jealous singers who also used to work for the Fox thing. What was her name? I think they called her bird?
Goldie.
And she was a...
Who is a pheasant, apparently. She is probably the skinniest pheasant I've ever seen.
I've had some delicious pheasants. Yeah, and she looked kind of just like a female cockerel anyway, and had blonde hair and was just a country singer of some kind.
Rich, a female cockerel is a hen.
That's right. But she didn't look like a hen. She looked like a cockerel. Or whatever. She was
actually, what she pheasant. Actually looked like was a human woman with feathers and a scary bird face.
Yeah. That was another thing that ruined me, was her face. It was okay later on. When she got a tan at the farm, she looked more like a chicken. But while she was pale in Vegas, it was just weird.
Also, Chanticleer is kind of overly muscular and a little bit vain and, like, preening as well. He's always looking at himself in the mirror. I don't know if he's that good a hero, really. This sort of smug entertainer.
See, that, to me, that was like... There was a hint of an actual character there that they never developed or explored particularly.
Well, he's sad, and he needs a woman, but she's being manipulated and being promised stuff if she... You know, seduces him a bit and makes him happy, which is a bit dubious. I mean, I don't know what the implications are of making him happy, but
it gets a bit weird sexy in a couple of shots, and I was like, oh, this is uncomfortable.
But she falls in love with him, he falls in love with her, and it doesn't end up being a horrible heel turn manipulation, apart from at one point she goes, I'm sorry, I was only doing it for pretend initially, then I fell in love because... You know,
convenience.
Yeah. And so she ends up joining the good guys and not betraying him all the way, which is a shame because it would have been nice, as like more tension at least. But, you know, they just sort of pile it all in and go. And then I guess Chanticleer revs up a motorbike that was on the set of a film and drives off and sort of they all get away. I mean, how do they end up back at the farm and defeating
everyone? I don't know. They just end up back at the farm.
Oh, there's a bit of tension because the owls are sort of hovering round waiting for the battery to run out.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Then when it does, they're like, excellent, let's teleport.
Eat everything.
Yeah. Let's teleport in a dining table and have a ridiculous dinner party as we pass live animals round and go to eat them. But it's funny, though. Like, the performance is so brilliantly over the top, but he's just so enjoying intimidating these creatures.
I want to see the recording sessions with Christopher Plummer in the booth.
I like some of the mannerisms of the Duke of Owls as well. It's well animated in that regard, apart from he changes size whenever he feels like it. And why do we have to dislike owls anyway? Surely it should teach us that all animals in nature have their place.
I think Don Bluth just likes the idea of scary owls because there's a giant, terrifying owl in The Secret of Nim.
Yeah, it's horrible, man. Abby, weren't you saying you were defending the fact that we should like owls as well as one point to me?
Well, it's just he has demonised all owls, but all other animals are treated... Some are mean... Some are good.
Foxes and pheasants and owls are bad. And everyone else is fine because they're just happy and they sing and they come out at night. I mean, you need night time. You need the balance. Surely owls are allowed to exist at night. Bit harsh. Isn't it? But whatever. The owls are about to eat the pig and the other animals, the rabbit and stuff. And then luckily, everyone just falls in from somewhere.
Yeah.
Are we forgetting the key part, or did they literally just shoot out of a cannon from Vegas and land on...
No, they fly there in their big penis helicopter.
Oh, yeah, the mouse can control a helicopter, because she falls off or something and goes missing, and then she ends up stealing the helicopter, which I thought, like, one of the things I liked was the evil fox guy, who's the agent of Chanticleer, is kind of trying to show him how awesome his life could be, how many fans he has, and it's kind of a good life. And he's flying around in this massive pink helicopter. And at one point, he gets the pilot to tip the helicopter so they can lean out really far at like some fans who make like a heart shape like on the ground. I thought it was rather bold of him, and the fact that he plays golf in a helicopter—that's classy. But yeah, they land and fight. They just sort of scare off the owls. But then the Duke of Owls decides, I got magic, so I'll be big now.
Yeah, which I could have done at any point.
Yeah, and I'll cough loads of magic and put Chanticleer in the ground. Oh, he got knocked out, didn't he?
So they smashed him into the ground with a magic hammer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Edmund's the one who gets like knocked out.
Yeah. Oh, right, yes, right. And yeah, so he has the magic. Also takes the form of like a Green Lantern ring magic, where you can make any shape you want with this weird gas. The owl coughs, and he hammers him into the ground, and is big and scary, and becomes like it's like Rita Repulsa has thrown down her magic shaft thing, and made him big for the Power Ranger battle at the end. It's Megazord, but instead of that. Everyone just shouts, Chanticleer!
Oh.
While he slowly drowns.
Yeah!
Rock-a-doo! And then, you know, he shoots up and is on fire like a firework. And sings, and the sun comes up, and of course owls hate sunlight. And
so he shrinks.
Yeah, really, really tiny.
As you do.
And then can get poetically bullied by Hunch, who he's been bullying all along. I did like that for Hunch. I liked that he got a little comeuppance and got to have a go and swat.
It didn't do that thing that a lot of, like, especially like early 90s animated kids films did, where they were reasonably jolly and then they'd kill off the villain. like Basil the Great Mouse Detective. Oh, we'll just drop him off Big Ben. Whoa!
Actually,
hold on a minute.
There's a similar vibe to the Duke of Owls to Ratigan.
Yeah.
They get irked and they like to be controlling and wear big black capes and stuff. They got a similar thing going on, really. And they both kind of swell up a bit at the end. Yeah. I don't want to draw too many comparisons because I know both me, Abby and Ollie all treasure that film. And I'm sure you guys quite like Basil the Great Mouse Detective too.
It was one of my favourites as a kid.
So I won't compare it too closely for fear of scorn.
Yeah.
But, you know, happy endings, sunshine and singing on the farm. And then...
And
go on.
Yeah. I was just going to say, and Edmund wakes up as a boy in bed, being taken care of by his mum, and then is again magically transported to the farm with probably the worst blue screen sequence I think I've ever seen.
Oh, it is terrible. Himself, it's nowhere near like Roger Rabbit level, is it?
Yeah, and it's like he's dancing, but no one gave him any direction or like told him what was supposed to be happening.
Oh dear! But it's also weird how the mum is just like, what? Like it's that classic like. Dorothy wakes up in Kansas thing, and everyone's like, what the heck are you on about? Talking gibberish. Where's Chanticleer and the others? What kid?
Like,
oh, the thing from your book. Like, but no, they don't even give him that. They're just like, just stay in bed, yeah? We'll be the proper farmers here. It's weird.
What happened? Like, was the kid just asleep and dreaming the whole time? Or did his mum find him in a ditch? Like, what?
Well, he must have concluded the book. I don't know.
Because she was, like, patting him, like, his face like he was ill.
Yeah.
But there's no reason he should have been, right?
Yeah,
he didn't. That was my thing. I didn't understand it.
Well, their house got flooded to the roof, so everyone must have been cold and wet at some point, even though that didn't happen.
Their house was filled with, like, red smoke while he was waking up.
And a hole in the roof, which wasn't there. So he must have just dreamt it all and got a fever or something. It was definitely a fever dream, wasn't it?
It was a fever dream, wasn't it? Yeah.
It felt like one.
Oh, that just makes the film even worse, then. There's just a cop-out, oh, it was all a dream ending. Shut up. Like, so the kid basically went through nothing and learned nothing. It was just his subconscious throwing up bizarre images from his bedtime story.
But that's all these things. Like Alice in Wonderland and Dorothy You know, like she.
Yeah, but
they wake up from dreams and they've learned nothing apart from to be weirder and talk her up a little bit. Like, Dorothy ends up in an asylum if you go by the Return to Oz logic.
Yeah.
And well, Alice just spouts nonsense to her English teachers from now on.
Yeah, but like back then, putting that twist in a story, fine. But in 1991.
it's a bit.
You know, in 91, things were bleaker. It should have been he was dead the whole time, and this was him in purgatory.
But was it all a dream? I mean, the last 5 minutes, they're back to cartoons.
Who knows? That's just a kid hallucinating.
Yeah, he never did recover from that fever. He got chicken pox.
Aww.
That's rubbish, I'm sorry. I think we all learned the lesson of, you know, how to tie your shoes, because, you know, once you're told once, that solves that problem. We all learn to not take your friends for granted when they sing, because they bring the sun up. And not rich and fame doesn't, you know, bring you happiness. Only fake girlfriends who later fall in love with you bring you happiness. And owls hate rain and light. No, owls love the rain and hate sunshine.
Well, hate everything else.
Yeah.
And eat pigs.
And they're also spectacularly evil in a very gloriously camp way.
Well, I think we've learned a lot, guys. I'm sure, you know, you had your own lessons you learned along the way.
Yeah, Chanticleer is not a word you want to remember. Yet you're not going to have a choice.
They do say that word more than anything. So, final thoughts, guys? Abby, you've been quite quiet. Do you want to wrap up some thoughts there?
I spent a lot of this episode trying to think of nice things to say.
Nursing a scotch.
Because I hate to just diss something endlessly. They're good in all things. But the only good thing about this was Christopher Plummer. And everything else was ill thought out, ill conceived, and ill executed.
I think the cast, like the actual voice actors, Glen Campbell included, do a decent enough job with what they're given. Mm. I can't remember, apart from, I can't remember the bird's name.
The magpie in it.
Yeah.
Snipes.
Yeah. Apart from Snipes, nobody, and even he was obviously directed to be as irritating as possible.
Yeah.
So, like, as far as, like, the voice acting goes, nobody is bad that I remember.
No, it's really down to a story that should have been corrected by, I don't know, initially the writer should have come up with something better, and then it should have been like, oh, do you know what, this story doesn't make a lot of sense and has no point, and, you know, has logical problems and bad motivations. Like, a little bit could slide, but really, it needed a good rewrite, and then, you know, more effort and love put into it.
It seems to me that, like, I don't know the background of the film really, but I get the feeling that if they'd left Don Bluth alone to make it by himself, like his earlier films, it would have probably turned out a lot better.
It's hard to say, but it certainly didn't turn out well with all the people involved making it as they did. Jamie, do you have any other thing else? I mean, also everyone should bear in mind some kind of rating. Has anyone got any suggestions?
Some sort of song or singer or something.
That's going to be a tough one. Well, anyway, you can think
maybe some sort of singer / animal comparison. I don't know.
Maybe so.
That's really complicated.
I apologize for suggesting it.
Some kind of rock singer combined with an animal. It's like Elvis, but if he was an ass. Well, anyway, Jamie, do you want to say your final thoughts? You have started on them, I suppose.
Yeah, it's just rubbish, isn't it? Like, I don't know how, I don't know how else to put it. Like,
the kid's voice is quite irritating as well, and it's hard to like not. You know, it's difficult because you don't want to be mean. It's a kid; they're young, they're learning. But your voice is so annoying.
It's odd because it's kind of like it's the perfect voice. But it's so perfect that it's so horrible as well.
It's too innocent and naive.
Yeah.
And wholesome.
It's just the whole film is so, like, half-baked. And it's cheap and it's, like,
It's like a Elvis impersonator in Vegas.
Yeah.
But like a weird, really weird one, like Polish Elvis.
A really bad Disney impersonator, that's what this is.
This is what, like, this would be the example to hold up if someone was to say, oh, Don Bluth just ripped off Disney. Like, this would be the film to use as that, rather than, like, his good stuff, like, you know, Land Before Time.
Five Will Goes West is quite good as well.
That's not Don Bluth, though.
Is it not? But no, but American Tale is...
Yeah, he made the first one, and then they took it and did other things with the TV show and the sequels.
Gutted. I really like the sequel more, but the first one's fine.
Same with all the, like, whatever it is, the 27 Land Before Time sequels.
Yeah, there are too many of those. There's something about kids' films where if they're just the right kind of poor quality, they can just make thousands of them for some reason.
Well, now, hold on, because The Land Before Time is a classic.
No, but after that, after the numbers escalate above the first couple that are good, like, they go on forever. Like, there's so many, like, I don't know, Beethovens and, like, other, like, like just dog-based movies with many sequels.
The Land Before Time sequels are musicals as well, which makes little to no sense.
It's odd. But anyway, I mean, you know.
Yeah, it's just... There's just not really a lot to say. There's very few redeeming qualities.
It's like those things you can buy in, like, Asian marketplaces that are knock-off Disney products that are dangerous and health hazards. Like, sort of Winnie the Pooh, but it doesn't look like... It looks like a slightly weirder Winnie the Pooh with the wrong claws, and it sort of sparks electricity and is dangerous.
And they're in weird packaging. Like, it'll be a knock-off Winnie the Pooh in a box that says Harry Potter on it.
Yeah. It's very wrong and confused. But
I think a rating system, actually, you gave me an idea. This is like, do you remember when Elvis was an actor and they just stuck him in films? And like, yes. they just pulled out of thin air and were like, go in that and sing.
I find it very hard to watch any film with Elvis in because of that. You may as well just put a cardboard cutout with like a tape playing behind it for all the good it does.
But like, This is just the cartoon equivalent of one of those films.
It probably would have been a good one if Elvis had lived into the 90s. He would have just done this as part of a contract.
But I can't think of anything better that I can pick. It's one of those like bad Elvis movies where they were just cashing in on Elvis, and this is the animated equivalent.
Yeah,
just that he was dead at this point, so they couldn't stick him in there.
Anthony.
Yes.
Any final thoughts?
Oh, what's left to say? I mean,
I feel like there's more Scott on deep down inside.
I guess I wasn't expecting anything near as bad as this. So it was such an utter disappointment to come. This is like. I think, Jamie kind of put it earlier on where, like, John Bluth has just been climbing this mountain of awesomeness, and then this film is just him falling off and dying, pretty much. I don't know what's to say. I mean, none of the characters are particularly likable or have any particular motivation. The songs are really forgettable.
Brief as well.
Like the only redeeming feature is Christopher Plummer, and that's only because he's overdoing it so much. I don't know what else to say, guys. I think we're just all happy with it's bad.
Well, that's the thing. When you dig up nostalgia, sometimes it turns to ash. I don't think it's important. Like we've ruined our own nostalgia potentially here, because it's the truth is more important. Surely, if we would go on saying, "Oh yeah, Rockadoodle was a funny, weird film from our past," and then someone might watch it by accident, or maybe they hear a recommendation, and now we've put the record straight. No one needs to get damaged by Rockadoodle again. This podcast should be a warning. If you've already watched it, I can only apologise. It should be a warning not to look at it, never to dig up nostalgia, because it will be worse than you remember. And just stay away from Rockadoodle. That's really... I mean, it's down there, I want to say, with Rock and Rule. There almost should be a third one to make it the Rock and Rubbish trilogy. Did you have any rating, or do you just want to leave and put it behind you, Abby?
This film is the embodiment of Crazy Frog.
Oh dear.
The animation that only exists because one annoying Nokia ringtone caught on for a bit.
I suppose, like, this is... It's kind of like a small child with their first, like, toy piano. And, like, all they can really do is hit it. They love it. And they're just hitting it and they're just loving it. But to everyone else, it's just atrocious and horrible.
Yeah. It's some kind of combination of, like, a knockoff Winnie the Pooh or Disney character playing an Elvis... Like, a knockoff Mickey Mouse in, like, an Elvis wig, impersonating Elvis, playing a children's piano and sparking dangerously. And it's just horrible and tragic and should be avoided. Or watched again. Let's put it on again, guys. Micah Pitbull's crashed in...
Did anyone else also notice it had the longest credits in history? Even though, like, the film is only 75 minutes long.
Yeah.
It still managed to cram, like, a 10-minute credit sequence.
Ew.
I don't think we continued after the... As soon as the happy animations went away, I think we closed...
Kicked over, yeah.
Yeah. We closed the file instantly, yeah.
Fair enough.
So, now that I've burnt our nostalgia and ruined it, we should pretty much conclude by saying goodbye, right? Or a 7-second song.
Yeah, this podcast is almost as long as the film.
Good.
Bye.
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 We're dangerous.